Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to touch on a topic that we hear less and less about each day, and that's why America is a great nation. And it is. I recently had a discussion with a good friend and a board member of Family Talk. His name's Congressman Bob McEwen, and he is an amazing man. Congressman McEwen is the senior advisor with Greenbaum, Dahl, and McDonald. It's a law firm. And as an Ohio native, he represented Ohio in the United States House of Representatives for six terms. He was also appointed by his colleagues to two of the most coveted positions in the U.S. Congress. One is the Select Committee on Intelligence, and that oversees all of our nation's secrets. And the other is the House Committee on Rules, which has jurisdiction over all legislation in Congress. He's married to Liz, he's got four kids, and as you can obviously tell, he is a very busy man who's doing a lot of great work for the kingdom. And before we get started, I just want to add that today's discussion is one that the whole family can enjoy. Congressman McEwen is very candid and he doesn't talk down to people, and we're going to be talking about the state of affairs that America is in right now, and young people need to hear this. They're the ones who are going to vote and determine America's future, and this subject is often ignored by them. So let me take you now to my discussion with Congressman Bob McEwen today on this Family Talk broadcast. Congressman McEwen, I heard you speak before a dinner we had a little while ago, and something you said has stuck with me, and I've been wanting to talk to you about it ever since. You were talking about our country and the state that we're in right now, and you related it to high schoolers, that if you ask high school students to name three things that makes America great, they don't have an answer for you, but they can tell you all the atrocities that's happened under American rule over the years. They can tell you all the bad things. They can say, oh, well, when Christopher Columbus came, Native Americans were harmed, and during the Civil War, they were given blankets with diseases. And I'm not trying to downplay that, but it was striking to think of how many thousands of kids there are around our country who can't tell you what makes America great. And that was frightening. It was really frightening to me.
Well, Ryan, it's great to be with you. And the behind the Iron Curtain, the communists and the left and the liberals have all been pointing toward America and attacking, abusing, writing stories about it. I remember once in Prague, before the Iron Curtain fell, and one of them stood up and gave the standard left-wing anti-American rant. I believe in the gate test. That is, you lift the gate and see which way people go. Mm. And there's a reason why people crawl over cut glass, barbed wire, and leaky boats to come to this place, because this is the lighthouse for the gospel. This is the place that this 4% of the population of the world called Americans invent more books, more plays, more symphonies, more copyrights, more inventions than the rest of the world combined. They generate more wealth in 200 years than the rest of all recorded history. Just try to think of anything. If you are a Mercedes dealer in Buenos Aires purchasing parts from Germany, you use an internet that was conceived, invented, and maintained by people called Americans. If you want to drive in the Himalayas and you want to go backpacking and you're from India, what do you use? A global positioning system that was invented, created, and maintained by Americans. If your ship, Japan imports 100% of their oil, they have no oil at all. And if you're in the middle of the Pacific and you're attacked by pirates, as happened over 300 times around the globe last year, to whom do you appeal? You appeal to the 370,000 Americans that wear the uniform of the United States Navy. And the United States is the standard for righteousness in the world. You know that if you're under attack or if you're being abused, there's one place that you can appeal. And that makes a certain amount of jealousy. And the unfortunate part is that we have people in academia who do not understand the great, great benefit that America is to the world.
Oh, I definitely couldn't have said it better myself. That's why I've got you here today. I can't wait till my son is starting to study history so he can hear from you himself. And I hope parents listening will bring their kids in to hear this. I heard you speak yesterday, and you were talking about what makes a country free. and what takes away freedom. And you were relating it to economics and some different factors on the two separate worldviews. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, first of all, if I take money away from you, I make your life more miserable. I mean, this isn't complicated. If I come and take money away from you, you have fewer choices. The kind of clothes you can wear, the kind of vacations you can take, the kind of car you can own, the kind of house you can live in. The more money I take away from you, the lower your standard of living. And of course, we know that there are people called criminals, and they come and take things away from us. And we rely on government to protect us from those thieves. However, we have also, in the Constitution of the United States, denied government the right to do the same thing the criminal did. And so America went from a wilderness to, in three generations, to the highest standard of living in the world for one reason, because it was the freest. And the freedom allowed people to save and invest, create. And the question now is, do we allow that to continue to happen, or there's an idea? An idea is, why don't we take from those people over there? Now, Americans didn't do that. For 200 years, America was unique because it had plastered on every school wall what were called the bedrocks of civilization, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. So we didn't worry about people going around shooting people. Thou shalt not steal. So therefore, you didn't worry about having to put a lock on your bicycle. Every school child left their bicycle out front, and every parent left their car in the parking lot with the keys in it, because we were taught thou shalt not steal. And of course, thou shalt not bear false witness, which means you don't lie. That when I look you in the eye and shake your hand, that we can now get into business together. Let's go. If you were to do that in Africa or in China or a lot of these other places, you have to have a contract that's 6 feet thick, because they couldn't trust them. And in America, where we didn't bear false witness, where we didn't lie, we could trust the person. But the most important, actually, perhaps, was the Tenth Commandment. The Tenth Commandment says, thou shalt not covet. That is, that I will never, ever think about wanting what the other person has. And so there's a popular TV program currently on PBS called Downton Abbey, in which there were these large homes throughout Europe. And when they wanted to take those homes in France, and under the French Revolution, they put the head of the owners of those on a pike, and they'd march up and down the street with the owner's head on a pike, and everybody would chant along behind them in a big parade. But then after World War II in Britain, they then decided that the owner had to pay 80% property tax on the value of the home, and so they had to abandon them. And so those very large, beautiful homes are abandoned all over Britain, because the people wanted to take what other people had. America never did that. We never said, I want that man's car. We want that man's house. We always said, someday we can have a car like that. Someday I want a house like that. And that made America the hope and opportunity for the rest of the world, that when they were attacked by their countries, attacked by the thieves in government, that they came here to be free of that. Now we hear talk about, let's get those top 1%. Let's get that 2%. As you know, currently the top 5% pay 60% of all the income taxes, and people say, no, they should pay more. We hear constantly they should take more.
They say it's not fair.
Not fair.
It's not fair that they make that much money. And my question is always, why is it not fair? Didn't they work really hard?
Well, Ryan, I was substitute teaching at the University of Cincinnati a while back. And they were giving this standard liberal leftist talk about that these people who have all this money should do such and such. And I would ask the question, how did they get the money? I just kept it up for about 5 or 10 minutes until finally it was abundantly clear to everyone in the room that they didn't have a clue as to why some people are rich. And the way that a person becomes wealthy is that they have to do something good for someone else. There's only two ways to get money out of a person's pocket. One is to reach in and steal it, which is coercion. Only two people can do that, criminals and politicians. The only other way is for them to voluntarily reach in their pocket and hand it to you. And the only reason they do that is because you do something for them that is a greater blessing than the money they have in their pocket. And they look at you and they say, well, the truth is, I would rather have that pair of shoes than have this $50. I would rather have that GPS unit than have this $200. And so the person, and here's the principle, the greater the contribution that I make, the greater the reward. Therefore, if we see a person who is wealthy, if you drive down the road and you look up and you see that large farm, that large house, that nice car, there's only two ways that they could have gotten it. Either they stole it, they walked up behind some guy in the middle of the night and slammed him up against the wall and they took it, or they did very good things for people. I was getting on the plane the other day. My son said to me, "Do you have an app that explains where you're going when you're changing planes, where you're the gate that you come in and the gate that you're transferring to?" And I said, "No, I don't have that." "Well, here," and so he downloads it for 99 cents, which means that while we're taxing in St. Louis or Atlanta or at O'Hare or whatever, that at that moment it will tell me what gate I'm coming into, bring up a picture of the airport, and I know if when I get off of this plane in about 10 minutes, either it's right across the hall or it's down or it's at another gate. Now, I don't know who made that, but I can tell you this. He didn't do it, or she didn't do it, because she likes me. But she blessed me, mm-hmm. hoping that a million people like me would make her a millionaire. And the success, the contribution that she makes, the greater it is, the more successful she will be. And if she's done that, then she is will be rewarded. Now, it comes along the guy sitting on the park bench or the politician that says, "Well, she shouldn't have $1 million." And so he comes in and he takes it. Now, that's what the rest of the world has done. They've always attacked the wagon pullers. They attacked the inventors and the creators. And you know where they escaped to? They came to America. Mm. Let me give you a quickie. Half of all the Nobel Prize winners in the history of the world have been American. And half of those were not born in America. They came here for freedom. Now, when they come here, do they suddenly get smart? Do they suddenly get rich? No, they get free. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, do we elect people who want to steal from other folks in violation of godly principles of covetousness? And if they do that, then they discourage that woman who made that app for me, and she will then get on a boat and do what people did for 200 years when they came to America. She'll go to Singapore, or she'll go to China, or she'll go to some place where she doesn't have it stolen from her. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at Detroit, when you look at what's happening in California, when you listen to the president, you can see those people can make very, very wealthy, happy, productive, rich places mm-hmm. and begin to make them poor.
You mentioned standard of living a little bit earlier, and you talked about America's standard of living compared with the rest of the world, and the people that we consider to be in poverty compared with the rest of the world. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, Robert Rector is at the Heritage Foundation. He does a study, and they update it every 24 months. It's now co-sponsored by the Wall Street Journal so that people can just follow. And they just take the facts. They take how many air conditioners are there in each country, and how many televisions are there in each country, and how many telephones are there, and how many cars, et cetera. I will say that when I was young, we had the highest standard of living in the world. No doubt about it. But a person living in poverty in America on public assistance has adjusted for inflation, receives more money than the average American in the richest country in the world in the mid-1950s. Let me just elaborate on it a bit. When I grew up, I didn't know anybody that ever went out to eat. The only time we ever went to a restaurant was when we were on vacation, and that didn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. We didn't know anyone who had two cars. Only a handful of people in our town had a blacktop driveway. Everybody, we're the richest nation on earth, everybody had a telephone, but they only had one. And it was usually on a little shelf so you could reach in from two rooms to find out where it was. And everybody had a television. And then because we were wealthy and over 90% of the people in America had a television, the rest of the world didn't have a television. Okay, now let's fast forward. Everybody had a car in the 1950s. There are now more cars in America than there are licensed drivers. So it's not every family has a car. It's virtually everyone in the family has a car. They used to all have a telephone per family. Now every person has a telephone. Mm-hmm. Everybody had a television because we were wealthy. Now every individual in the family has a television. People going out to eat, there are a fourth of all the breakfasts in the country every morning are served by McDonald's. People just regularly think about going out to eat. So our definition of how rough it is and how terrible it is, how hard it is out of all proportion to any rationality. Half of all the people on earth live on less than $2 a day. The highest standard of living next to America is Western Europe. The study to which I referred, the Rector study that is available online to anybody from the Heritage Foundation, Robert Rector, has now been doing it for 30 years. American in poverty, in the definition of poverty, is more likely to have a telephone, a television, an air conditioner, an automobile, eats more meat, and has more square footage space than the average resident of the second richest spot on Earth, Western Europe.
So how is that redefinition of poverty affecting our nation's policy? You know, we're writing legislation and we're enacting laws to help people out, so to speak. Do they need the help?
Well, as has been said for a long time, that you cannot have a welfare state, that is, where you give people this standard of living. So you take Naples, Florida, which is a very lovely, beautiful spot, and is filled with farmers that worked 80 and 100-hour weeks for 40, 50 years, saved enough money to retire. And they live in a condo in Naples, and they have air conditioning, and they have cable television, and they have a lanai, and they wake up in the morning at their leisure because they've worked their entire lives for this heaven, to be able to go sit on the lanai and read the newspaper and drink coffee and maybe go out during the day, maybe play a little golf or do something, and then come back to the early bird special, and then in the evening with their wife sit and watch cable, and they have just lived in paradise.
Sure.
Or you can just flat walk to America at any time, sit down. We will give you an air-conditioned apartment. We will give you cable. We will give you plenty of food. You can wake up when you feel like it. You can sit on the lanai and drink your coffee. We will give you unlimited free health care without any charge, as much as you consume or think about. Mm-hmm. We will give you bonuses and scholarships for education if you're interested. But short of that, you can live like a king and never lift a finger. Now, if you allow the borders to be open, you cannot have a welfare state and open borders, because then you discover that it gets overwhelmed. And that's sort of where we are.
So that's what's taking place today.
It's taking place today.
Bob, what do we do? I want to restore America to greatness. I want to teach kids about what makes America great. And you've explained a lot of those things. But as individuals listening now, we've created a need in them. They want to do something to make a difference. You know, the midterm election is still over a year away. The next presidential election is not for four more years. What can we do right now to make a difference for our country?
It's not complicated as to how things work. For example, if you plant corn, you will get corn in return. If someone gives you a bunch of seeds and you eat them or you throw them away, you won't have a harvest. Mm-hmm. Now, let's don't call those seed corns. Let's call that money. And that is, if you have money and you invest it, you get a return. However, if you have someone steal it from you, like the government or someone else, then there won't be any crops next year. And so the taking of the seed corn, the taking of capital in all of the former communist countries and in all of the Asian tiger countries of Singapore or Taiwan or Korea, those countries, they don't tax capital. There is no capital gains tax. And so therefore, that money can be used to create new jobs. Now, if they have income and they put it in their pocket, that's called an income tax. They have to pay that. But as long as they leave the money for the purpose of planting it to create more jobs, then they prosper. In America, we have the highest capital gains tax of any of our competitor nations, and the president just increased it another 50% in January because he was going to tax those rich people. The fact is that when you do that, you destroy the creation of jobs, and so you see America not competing. If you do the wrong thing, you pay the price for it. Your question was, what do you do about it? You just undo the wrong thing, just very simply. You cut capital gains. You allow people to invest and save in this country. This country is abundantly blessed. Listen to this crazy figure. 10% of all the fresh water in the world is in Lake Superior. We've got five Great Lakes. We've got rivers everywhere. We have abundant water. We are number one in the production of natural gas. We could be number one in production of oil. Our oil production is exploding on private lands. 85% of all the oil America has is on federal lands, and the president won't let us drill there. But if we wanted to, this nation could be energy independent in no time at all. We could leave the billions and trillions of dollars going around the globe to people that hate us. That money could be stayed here to create jobs. This country could take off like a rocket at any time if we had a president and a leader that wanted to. But here's the point. As a recent editorial in the Prague newspaper in Czechoslovakia said very simply, said America can survive, Barack Obama. But America cannot survive an electorate that would elect Barack Obama. Mm. If we elect people that want to attack, abuse, and steal from the wagon pullers, the productive, the job manufacturers of America, then we will live in poverty. But if you just quit it, the natural state of things is that people want to save and produce and invest. And this country could right itself overnight.
So you still have hope for our country.
I have hope for the proper kind of leadership. Mm-hmm. I've been through it already. In 1980, the country was exactly where it is now. We had embassies being overrun. We had ambassadors being killed. We had a military that was in a state of collapse. We had 18% inflation, 22% interest rates. Mm-hmm. We had gas lines, no energy production. We were going to have to wear our sweater and ride our bicycle and blow at windmills and all these sort of things.
I was 10 in 1980, and you had to get gas on odd and even days based on your license plate. And my parents installed an extra gas tank on one of our vehicles so we wouldn't run out.
And the president told us that that was our future, that we're just consuming all these goods. Let me just tell you, let's back up. You said 1980. I'm going to tell you about 1978. In 1978, the president of the United States went on nationwide television, wore his little sweater, and told us that we were all running out of natural gas. And so they passed a federal law that said that you could not use natural gas in anything other than residences. Because back in those days, they had decorative lighting along up and down the street where you had streetlights that had natural gas lamps. They were very beautiful. And you had businesses. In Ohio, we had 2,400 acres under glass. That is that we raised flowers and vegetables and things during the winter. And because we were in emergency, we were running out of natural gas. We're all going to die next Tuesday. They shut off the natural gas, destroyed businesses that have been in families for two and three generations because we were at a crisis. They demanded state legislation. I was in the state legislature at the time to immediately reform so that no gas could be wasted on anybody but grandma in her residence. None of those dirty businesses could use this stuff. Why? Because we're running out of natural gas. Well, if you talk to anyone that understands, you talk about 5 or 10 or 15 or 20, and this is 100 plus. 100 plus means you can't calculate how much there is. Every calculation that is available to us is that the United States has more than 100-year supply of natural gas. It's much higher than that. But they will always tell us that we're going to run out of stuff. I just mentioned to you about fresh water. Mm-hmm. We now have these discounts that you get if you use these chemical toilets. And so you go to the finest hotels in Washington, a place that is built on a swamp, where in the summer you walk around behind any building and they're pumping water out of the air because the place is filled. There's water everywhere. It's surrounded by water. And you go into these nice hotels like the Willard and the others, and they have chemical toilets. Because they're saving water, because liberals say we're going to run out of water. And they write the law such that the average taxpayer living in southern Ohio has to pay taxes so that these businesses can get a subsidy to purchase chemical toilets. These folks can file up a two-car funeral. Bottom line, you mentioned about the fact that supposedly we're running out of oil. What did Ronald Reagan do? He comes in, immediately takes all of the Carter regulations, and he cancels them. And within a matter of days, the gas lines are gone. The filling stations are open 24 hours a day. People are rewarded for drilling once again. And by 1982, we're at the highest production the nation had ever seen. So if you do the wrong thing, you can mess it up. Mm-hmm. If you do the right thing, you can fix it. And we just need to elect people who know how to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, thank you so much for being here. I think that's a great place to close. We appreciate your support of Family Talk and being our board member. And giving us a little enlightenment and education today, and we're going to keep listening to you.
Ryan, I'm a fan of yours and what you're doing, and it's an honor to be with you. Thank you so much.
I want to end today by again thanking Congressman McEwen for taking time out of his busy schedule to be with us here on this Family Talk broadcast, and again repeat what he said at the end, elect people who know how to fix it. It sounds simple, and it could be that simple. To find politicians and people that want to get in there and work and fix the problems of our country. Once again, I highly encourage you to share this program with your friends and family, namely the younger generations in your home, because it'll prompt us to stay ahead of what our decision makers are doing. We can't change the course of where we're headed without knowing what the problems are to begin with. So I hope we've piqued your interest to do a little research of your own. You can do that by joining us at drjamesdobson.org. There you can request a complimentary broadcast CD of this program with Congressman McEwen. Or when you call us, 877-732-6825. While online, be sure to check out what Congressman McEwen is up to today and the great contributions he's making. And here in the close, if you have a burden for where our country's headed and you want to partner with Family Talk in strengthening this nation and informing people on what's going on and fighting for religious liberty and for our freedoms here in America, we'd love for you to join us financially. You can donate online by visiting drjamesdobson.org. You can do so via our smartphone app or when you call one last time, 877-732-6825. Thanks for tuning in today, and please be sure to return next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.